You know, we spoke earlier about this elderly gentleman who said that he had invested his money in mutual funds and went to a commercial bank to redeem these mutual funds and was told that he could only get 20% of what he had, and they couldn't tell him when next he would be able to get any more of the money. The rationale which was given to him at the time, he said, was that the banks have had to take a blow from the restructuring, and therefore it was being passed on to the customers. But I've spoken to at least one banker who says that that's nonsense, that there's no connection between the two, and what the person involved needed to do was to escalate the matter up the hierarchy of the bank. I know that that person took other action. I think they went to the Financial Services Commission. But the suggestion is that in the circumstances, you know, he needed to deal with the bank itself, because what he was told by the person further down did not really mesh with what was considered to be the truth of the matter. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Yes, hello. Welcome.
Hi. How are you doing?
I am well, and you?
Not too bad. Yeah, my contribution is in connection to some of the things you had to say while I was you were speaking to the same thing, Revisionist Bank, and you were talking about protesting and that sort of thing. But just before that, when I called, I had in mind the fact that how can you really be able to protest and have freedom of expression when most of what you, let me stay clear, I believe in law and order, but how can you really protest and have these things in that list when now you don't find yourself in a situation where you have to go to the police to get permission to do anything that comes out as a protest or expressing against the popular or the what is happening in society. I see, like, in the state, the people are able to come out and protest. In Barbados, just recently, the police told a group that they can't get permission. They had to go to the Attorney General. Now, even though the Attorney General is the person who is in authority, yet how is it possible that one person can determine whether the people have been allowed to make their feelings known about the situation? I really don't understand.
You have to go back. What you have to look at is how the law in Barbados has been constructed. And
but it needs to be changed.
How far back do these particular laws go? And what was their objective? The objective basically was to keep people in a position where they would have to get permission to step out and to be able to be heard on matters, no matter how peaceful their protest would be. You know, you go look at what has been written, I believe, by Professor Sir Hilary Beckles about the Barbados situation. That Barbados was we helped to create and to spread a number of the practices that other people assumed for trying to keep people quiet. No wonder we are like the way that we are. You know, in many instances, we continue to face it today. You know how many people out there suffer from things and don't want to talk about them? You know how many of them sit down and say, well, I'm not talking about it. I can let Dennis Johnson do it for me. Or I can call Mr. P and ask Mr. P to do it for me. Or, you know, or I can just sit down and talk about it in a chat. Oh, they're nothing better than having them sit down and talk about these issues in chats. But you never hear their voices. You never see them write anywhere in what is seen as a public forum to say, listen, this is not good enough. You know why? Because the fear of victimization is real in a country like this. Even when people in power may not be setting out to victimize anybody, the belief is that you are vulnerable to victimization. So this is all part and parcel of the evolution of the Barbadian society.
But Mr. Elizabeth, it's only about victimization because, I know that that is a part of it, because everything is not political and everything is not really, because even in the church, preaching the gospel, one time you could have preached, now you got to get permission to go and spread the good word out in the community. Because the society started to despise certain practices, and they have to generate, assimilate the laws for these things to happen. Because you're going to district, a popular district, and you have to preach, or you have to speak to the people in the district about serving the Lord, they say you come in and cause a disturbance, and all you're doing is bringing good news to them. So therefore, I'm saying...
Or what you see as the good news.
Well, telling about the love of God and so on, because right now in this society, those things are almost absent, that way you get so much violence and that sort of thing. Because whereas in the past, you would be spreading the love of God and salvation and that sort of thing. These are things now that you got, even though the plague of police.
Well, they will tell you also, there are some who tell you that the church in a society like this has helped people to accept the status quo and not keep any noise.
Well, I agree too. But see, there's a whole problem part of things that have been happening that need to be looked at. I don't believe that nobody should have to be petitioning police to protest peacefully. I believe that if the group of people wanted to come together and protest, that all that happened is the police want to be there to make sure that it don't get out of hand. But I don't see why you go going and write a letter and ask the police to give permission to have a protest. I don't understand that.
Well, that is how it is. That's our law. That's our law. Of course, you must understand, though, that the world has changed a lot. You don't necessarily have to go and stand up in any group of people these days to protest. You know, people do online protests as well now.
Yes, Mr. Elizabeth, but look at the people in the States. They could have done it here. You have seen too.
Well, you have a combination of that in the States, you know.
Yeah.
You have a combination.
Yeah.
But more importantly, what are we protesting against? What is the protest about when people take to the streets in Barbados? What are the issues that we look at, and what are those that we ought to be looking at?
Well, we choose some issues. We choose some that we think that affect us, not realizing that what affects me today may affect you tomorrow, and so on and so forth. But I find that we choose what we want to do. And that really what it should be. I believe that we should look at all what's happening in society and find some way as a means of representing ourselves in relation to it. Hello?
Well, fair enough. We'll wait and see what comes of all of this. I mean, the international movement that is taking place right now, the call for change, is a very significant one. I don't think that we have seen anything like this in a long time, or even before. If we cannot effect change now, I doubt that we will be able to do so in the not too distant future. So this is the opportunity to get people to listen and to bring about some of the change that people have been agitating for so long. But in the context of Barbados, you know, one of the things that you got to watch is that you cannot really control all the areas that will be affected by that call for change. For instance, I was walking through Swan Street yesterday, and I heard some men talking about my dad's police brutality. Now, you know, we have been listening to this, the discussion and the protests in the United States, in the context of the police and how they deal with black, how white police and white America deals with black people. You know that overnight, two policemen have been shot dead in Jamaica, all right? And, you know, they aren't white policemen, they're black policemen, all right? What you cannot control here is the possibility that this matter is not going to stay within the confines of white and black, but it is going to be about police power.
Police power, yeah.
All right? And, you know, it is quite possible that an offshoot of this is going to be, so even in black communities and black countries, majority black countries, how do the police wield their power and how are they seen by the people, the citizens. So this, you hear this little bit of a grumbling and an undercurrent in Barbados as well. It hasn't reached the level that, you know, other issues have reached, but you can, it's that is part of the conversation, huh?
People seeing what's happening, and they're able to make a better judgment of what is abuse of power and what is real real administration of power to the extent that needs to be administrated.
Because these approaches have been handed down from you know, from the colonial era. The whole, I mean, if you look at how a police notice has described black fellas when they're missing or something like that, or they want them, you know, over the years, when you get the description of a black man, even here in Barbados, you're frightened just for that description, you know. Where did I come from, huh? So all of that needs to be taken into consideration. There are some things that we've grown up with that, you know, you say, boy, the more things change, the more they remain the same.
Okay. All right, Mr. Ellis, it's good hearing you talking to you.
Pleasure. I know one thing, I mean, it has helped to bring back to the fore the speeches of some of the more significant people in the movement for human rights, not just black rights, but human rights. If you listen back to Martin Luther King and Malcolm X, interestingly, fighting for the same thing, but fighting in different ways. And all of this comes right back to us now, in addition to the new voices that we are hearing speak out about the injustice that people have had to endure, not only in the United States, but elsewhere as well. Down to brass tacks.
Good afternoon, Ms. Dallas. How are you?
I am well, and you?
Oh, I'm in good form.
Yes.
I was holding on for a long time, and I heard of the disturbing news about the explosions at Paragon.
Yeah.
And as a person who's had some training in industrial security management, I'm a little concerned, because if it is a bunker storing fireworks and explosives, my training tells me, and I'm not claiming to be is as experienced as the current fire chief and his team is, that sometimes you need to let those things explode out and burn themselves out while you keep the surrounding areas cool with foam and CO2 extinguishers and so on, the kind that you would use in aircraft situations. So the fact that it is at Paragon is a strategic thing, because Paragon is near to the airport, and the airport fire station, I think, if not all, most of the tenders are equipped to blanket that area with a high volume of foam. So while I'm concerned, I'm not too concerned, because over the many years, we have acquired the right equipment to fight those kind of fires and that kind of situation. I really wanted to speak to you about some points that I heard being come on the program, and I decided that I wasn't going to call the program for this week, but I'm not too concerned about being dubbed a regular caller, because I believe sometimes what I can share can help people learn based on my practical day-to-day experiences. I want to deal strictly with, firstly, with the old age treatment. I'm 71 years old, and I lost some money with CLECO. My father, who is now deceased, he lost a little bit of money, but because through the bonds and the debentures and treasury bills and all kind of things, I get so confused now that I don't even know what it was that he had. But in the rescheduling, the debt rescheduling, he had some bonds that were left in our care to look after his final expenses. And while he had a few dollars in the credit union that we were able to make his deposit for his funeral, we had a little time trying to find out what was going on with him. I think he had government, he had debentures. Anyhow, we finally got it resolved, and we were able to clear up the debt as it relates to his final expenses. It is something that needs to be addressed. And it brings me to the other point. Some time ago, Dr. Courtney Blackmon, who is the, everybody knows, is the former head of the Central Bank, I believe he's still alive, did a study for the Barbados Cooperative Credit Union League. I have been a member of a credit union as far back as 1968. I joined the St. Mark's Cooperative Credit Union, a small credit union, predominantly agricultural cooperative, as it was called, because of the area I grew up in, and I started my working career as a sugar factory, as an apprentice sugar factory mechanic. And growing up in rural St. Philip, a lot of the private lands, a lot of the lands were owned by private people, and they got together with a fellow called, we used to call him Snuffy Brung. He's Dr. Sonia Brung's father. But his relative was Everton Brung, Snuffy. And he got together, he had studied cooperatives in Canada. And he got together with a group of men from the area and formed a cooperative, which is still going today. It's now called the St. Mark's Cooperative Credit Union Limited. So I was involved in the credit union for a very long time. When I moved out of St. Philip, I then joined the... transferred to the City of Bridgetown Cooperative Credit Union, and I have been with them ever since. Dr. Blackmon suggested to the Barbados Cooperative Credit Union League that they should petition the government of the day for the establishment of a cooperative bank. And the credit union at that time was boasting assets of about $6 billion Barbados dollars. And Courtney Blackmon, in his report, and I saw a copy of the report. I did not keep a copy of it, and I regret that, because I like to do research and I love numbers. But Dr. Courtney Blackmon said that with $2 billion, Barbados dollars, they had enough capital base to open a cooperative bank, and it could thrive. And that caught on to me, because I was a member of a cooperative bank when I worked for Marriott Hotels in the United States. Her salaries were paid through the cooperative bank, and I had a checking account and a credit card that was issued and paid through this cooperative bank. And it was made up exclusively of all Marriott Corporation employees in the United States. You had to be living in the United States to be part of this cooperative bank. And I was a member for 2 years because I was between New York, Washington, Tampa, Florida. And so I understand and I know how cooperative banks work. So that is some food for thought there.
Yeah, but one of the differences is the environment in which we are operating.
There would be the environment. There are things they were concerned.
The environment today is one where we have to deal with this concept of correspondent banking as well.
Dr. Blackmon made reference to all those things, and he talked about the issue. He said,
but at that time, correspondent banking was not a big issue.
It was not a big issue, but he also said that it could be an issue, and he was concerned about how the cooperative bank would handle the foreign exchange and the issuing of checking accounts and the issuing of credit cards. Those were, when he did the SWOT analysis, those were the things that he were put into that. I remember credit cards was one, the listing and the correspondent banking facilities was another, and one was the handling of foreign exchange. Those were the three that I remember. There may be more. Moving on, though, the president of the Bankers Association about 2 years ago or less, during a discussion on the mobilizing funds out of the credit union movement for investment purposes, said that she was not concerned. I think her name is Donna Wellington. She was not concerned about the credit union and funds because the credit union did not have a bank and they would still have to bring the funds into the commercial banks. And I thought that was a very arrogant statement to make in light of what we were talking about, because it was recognized that the Barbados economy was in some trouble, and as opposed to going overseas to borrow on the foreign exchange market, you could mobilize some of the local funds. And that struck a very sour note with me, because whenever you borrow foreign exchange, you have to pay back in foreign exchange. And therefore, with depleted foreign exchange reserves, it makes it a little more difficult for the country. Now, I want to talk, I really call to talk about heritage tourism, but so I'm going to cut short the presentation. But we as a country, and I've said this over and over again, we have not taken advantage of our world heritage tourism site. We have not marketed it correctly, and we have done very little with it. And in the meantime, Bridgetown continues to be a dark and dirty city. Thank God for the Hyatt Ziva, the refurbishment of the Empire, and some of the things that are coming along. And I 1,000% support those ventures. A city, a capital city, must be a lively place. You cannot shut down Bridgetown at 4:30. And then it becomes a ghost town by 5 o'clock, and then curse the cruise liners and curse the cruise passengers for not spending any money in Barbados. Where are they going to spend the money?
Okay, we got to go. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, welcome.
Good morning. Yeah, Miss Ellis?
Hi.
Yeah, what I want to know, we here in St. Joseph is a big problem all the time with water.
Yeah.
And we're meeting it all the time. I want to know how the government got things organized so that things can be better and still sending bills to you. It shouldn't be. This is hurting. You know, without water all the time, don't get much thank you send our way, do. Still out water. Can't tap the house. Can't sell the road that they got put down. Can't get no water.
But part of the problem with water and people paying bills for water that they don't receive is that no group of people in this country, as far as I am aware, has found it necessary to mount a challenge to the Barbados Water Authority in a formal sense on this particular issue. You know, we got all sorts of lawyers in this country, some of them who do exceedingly well and some who may be smelling hell. But I believe that the Barbados Water Authority, because I suppose in many instances, state-owned entities ride roughshod over people, you know, and it is only because you see this thing about protesting, you don't have to go there on the street to protest to get things done, you know. You've got to organize yourself. So one way of dealing with it is that you call brass tacks and complain. But what more can you do as citizens of, you know, to say, look, we've had enough of this. I've heard so many of you complain about this. You don't get water, but you get bills.
But you get bills. And listen now, we have a representative wrong here that I believe nobody ain't got to tell him. He know how bad this is up here.
But he's complaining too. He behaves as powerless as you.
I can tell you something. I don't think he complained. He had somebody here, he complained in a very, very, very long time. And people up here still suffering.
Well, I didn't hear. I can't say that. I heard him complain up to recently about it. But to me, part of the answer must lie in the power of the people, and that power can be exercised within the confines of the law by challenging the Barbados Water Authority on the matter. You know. But are you going to do that? If you go and do it, you know what's going to happen. You come from St. Joseph. So the first order of business is you got to be a Dem. A Dem can't, not you personally. You say whoever decides that they're going to do that. Oh, you're not a Dem, you're a B, but you won't embarrass the Mia Motley administration. You understand? So these are the things that stop people from doing what is in their best interests. When the Dems were in office, you were afraid to do it. Because the Dems are going to say, oh, you're from St. Joseph. That's the reason why you're doing it. But in all this, what happens? You end up spending money and paying bills and not getting water. Something is wrong with that.
I tell you something, man. I don't know. This thing is so hurting. I can tell you. And look, the roads, we got some roads that you can't get through. Good, nothing. So nothing don't do in St. Joseph, this part of St. Joseph. And these things ain't good. And once again, could you help me? I hear somebody like Rod was speaking this morning on the other side. Could you help me if I could get his number? I believe it there.
Who? Rod?
Rod, yeah.
I don't know. You leave your number and I'm sure he will call and make contact with you. What happened? You want to see him dance now that the restrictions have been lifted?
No, I don't think Raul is a very serious fella, and he's got about his business in a way that I like, you know. He don't really in the sense of, like, I don't think he would do nothing to hurt the government.
You don't think so? But you want him to do something to hurt the government? down to brass tacks. It's 12:44. Welcome to the program.
Good morning, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
Yeah. I have three little points to raise with you. One, now I was sitting here, the no plans are calling, but after hearing Mr. O'Neill, knowing the conversations I had yesterday with a couple of workers, especially a particular teacher, I decided to call to find out if you, knowing that you should know by now, could help this lady, I believe she's listening. She told me yesterday that she have no plans of joining no boss program that is set up by government. And she notified them that she don't want nothing to do with it. But she was told, not that she saw it, that she have to fill out a form. She didn't tell me what on the form or nothing, because she ain't seen the form yet. And she understands she'd be paid in two checks, one from the Treasury and one from the Central Bank. Is that true or not?
That's my understanding, yes.
That's how it is. Okay. So Mr. O'Neill, who came on this morning, and to me, he was more interested in what your caller said than what you was asking him. Because after he didn't answer nothing you asked. I believe it's a big mistake interfering with anybody's salary. And if the person said they're not interested, I don't, because the way government operates, you see this two-check thing? One is there's 92 checks in turn up in time. What's wrong with the whole system? You want to raise $100 million or $120 million. Chicken feed. When this government took over, you and I had this discussion before, this government came in and found $100 million for road works. You and I discussed that already. And I ask you, if you're satisfied with the amount of work that you have seen done, where road improvements concern for that $100 million, pressuring the civil servants in this bond, this and bond that they're talking about, to me, I don't understand it. It's not bare foolishness. So you have just helped this lady by explaining to her what she wanted to find out. That she have to sign a form and she'd be receiving two checks. Let me move to my next one. Denny. I would like Denny to cool down.
Call me Denny. He ain't got... Mr. Denny, sorry. You put Mr. Denny to my name.
Mr. Denny's my friend.
Well, that doesn't mean that you can't call him Mr. Denny.
I don't say David all the time.
But you don't call me Ellis?
Okay. Oh, sorry, I will put a title to his name. Mr. Denny. Mr. Denny this morning, if I hear him right, I will repeat everything that he said, because sometimes you got to be careful when you're saying things that a person says. But the impression he gives me is that he was refused to march by the Commissioner of Police. And on his way to the court, he received a call from a gentleman. And the gentleman told him that he canceled, that he okay, he can march. What I want to find out, can the Commissioner of Police give orders for anything without the Attorney General permission?
I really don't know the law on this particular area. I would have to be guided by people who know that aspect of it, you know?
But it didn't sound good. It sounded the way, and I relate that Mr. Denny go to the Commissioner of Police and start, because it sounded like if the Commissioner of Police don't want him to have a march. And I know that it's not so, and it's unfair to the Commissioner of Police. My next point, Miss Ellis. No, lady, Miss on the side, they call you. And she asked you a question, and you talk for about 3 minutes and you didn't answer it yet. Do you understand how the Prime Minister can give persons who keep facts permission to keep facts with up to 250 people? And on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, a curfew from 10 to 5? You can understand that, Ms. Ellis?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, is neither here nor there for me. I think that what is worrisome. You see, I remember in New York, as they got into their crisis, they had a rule like this, you know. No more than 250 people.
I'm not talking about that, Mr.
It was 500.
I'm not talking about the number of people.
What are you talking about now?
If you can have a curfew on Fridays, when the fellas can keep the facts, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday?
Yeah.
So then a person got infected Monday and got to go work Tuesday morning?
Yes.
What I'm saying is an oversight.
So what should be? So how should it been? How should it have been addressed?
I'm not saying how should be. I'm not the prime minister. I am just saying.
You're just here to criticize. You're not here to put any to advance any ideas.
Stop being so. You know, I told you last week that VOB got 7 moderators and 5.5 is a.
I heard you, but that's not the issue here,
Mr. Ellis. You cannot agree to give, especially the whole facts. This. You know, I used to keep facts too. You can't tell people what they
hate. You still do.
No, I just keep little parties.
Well,
if you see anything like a fact, it would be my son and daughter, not me.
When I turned up at your place, I found a fact. I didn't think it was just a little party.
Yeah, but it was held by my children. These livers won. And we can ask this girl, if we're done, we can have another one, a free one, or one that will take some money from you. But what I'm saying is, Alan, have you given the, because I know that mostly young people, have you given them the permission to keep their facts? Because to me, to tell me to get off the street at 10 to 5, that's almost a sleeping time. You should not tell anybody to be off the street at 10. But I'm saying these fellas who keep facts and the DJs and things, this is 3 to 4 months these fellas out there not making any money. Open up and get a little thing. All we have to do in Barbados right now, this is my belief, is to work at the seaport and the airport with people coming in and let people enjoy themselves, Miss Ellis. Otherwise, we can bury more people normal than the virus. You can't keep people under a lot of pressure all the time. And I hear the gentleman call about the church. I can't understand the church, but period. Because you're giving the minibuses permission that, you know, when you push your hand in, you don't know who just put their hand there. But you got all sorts of restrictions on the church. I can't understand, Miss Ellis. And Miss Ellis, you have a good day.
Well, I just want you to know that there are some people who explain to you that the whole issue of the Attorney General giving permission has a lot more to do with the lockdown and the what we call the emergency situation that we are under. And that is why that power rests with the Attorney General, as has been explained to us by some people here, okay? Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello, David.
Hi, how are you?
Okay, fine, thank you. There are 2 issues I would like to raise with you today. One is about the virus and one is about transportation. Now, whether a vaccine is found for the virus or not, we're going to have to learn to coexist with the virus.
Yes.
So I'm saying that the government should establish a committee to look at protocols for us coexisting with the virus.
The government has to look at protocols. Let me ask you something. Given what we have experienced so far, what don't you believe that we have a good sense of what is required to keep COVID at bay right now? Aren't those protocols explained to us? And some of them, they have been in place in various areas. So what else does the government have to do to get us to recognize this?
The schools aren't open, so you have to look at protocols for the reopening of schools.
Well, we're going to be discussing that on Sunday, on Brass Tacks Sunday.
No, what you're discussing on Sunday is for people who are doing external
exams. No, we are dealing with schools. No. We are dealing with the schools, reopening of schools, not just exams. That's not
so. You're not dealing with the reopening. Do you know that schools are on vacation for the rest of the students, not the ones doing exams?
Yes, but you still have to be talking about how you are going to approach the whole concept of reopening schools. You don't have to wait until then to discuss that, because this is the time to plan. And this is the time to help people become familiar.
Okay, they are planning to be coexisting with COVID.
Yeah, I think I take your point.
Reopening the schools and so on, all of these, we're looking at reopening the country. All of these are things that we got to look at if we are looking at the coexisting with COVID.
Well, there are some areas where you still have to get the protocols spelled out in some areas. But for you and I, you know, for the two of us, we are already in a situation, for instance, where if you're going into a public place, you have a sense of what the protocols are. If you're going to buy something in a shop, you know what the protocols are. If you're getting in a bus or a ZR, by now you should know what your protocols are. So there are quite a number of areas where we already have protocols. There are some where these need to be worked out. For instance, in the day nurseries, I don't know exactly how they're going to deal with that. And as you say, within the school system and stuff. But I don't know that there are too many other areas where that's a challenge.
Well, I'm saying that the committee should start looking at those. We don't have to.
But I would expect that's happening all right now, huh?
I don't know. All right. The next thing I would like to look at is transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm saying that instead of the transport board going and purchasing new buses, it would be better if they try and amalgamate the existing vehicles into the present transportation system, because it would reduce their expenses. When they get a bus to amalgamate in their program, they don't have to buy fuel for that bus. They don't have to look at maintenance for that bus. So they will come up with a saving.
That's an interesting point. I mean, since we have already amalgamated, so to speak, for the COVID period,
we could amalgamate
it may more. Give us, right, we have a good idea now of what could possibly obtain for the future. So I understand that point. Thank you very much. Down the brass tacks.
David.
Hello?
Good afternoon, David.
Yes, good afternoon. 12:57.
Yes, sir. I called really about the reopening of school for class 4s on Monday, but you just told a caller that you'll be discussing that on Sunday. However, I will ask you the question or raise a concern with you, and hopefully you can forward it come Sunday. But before that, I want to ask two questions. I don't know if you know the answer, but if we have a problem with an attorney here in Barbados, who should we go to in terms of possibly having that addressed?
Well, there's a disciplinary committee of the Bar Association.
Right. And do you know the makeup of the Bar Association disciplinary committee?
Well, it is largely lawyers.
Right. All right, and I'll ask the same question as it relates to police. If we have a complaint against the police, I suspect it's the same situation. You have to go to the police complaints committee.
Yes.
Right, and that is probably made up of police as well. My concern is, I think at a time like this, we need to move away from that type of system. I think there should be some kind of independence in terms of looking into matters related to that type of stuff. I don't think that we should have lawyers necessarily being the only person dealing with complaints against lawyers. I don't think that police should be the only people dealing with complaints against police. I think there should be some kind of independence in there so that people feel, I guess, more comfortable and probably would be more inclined to trust the working of the system, right? Because then you would most likely have a smaller degree of bias or perceived bias, let me put it that way. You follow me?
It's fair and reasonable, but it's an argument that I've heard over the years, and I agree with it. But we have never really been able to get the kind of significant change that is required in the composition of either panel. And, you know, I sense that on both counts, there is a high degree of resistance from the entrenched forces.
Yeah, but here it is, David. When, some time ago, when they had stop and search procedures going on, when there was a spike in crime and stuff like that, it was being said, if you don't have anything to hide, you shouldn't have to worry about being stopped and that type of stuff. So I can probably say the same thing in respect of those panels. Do you understand? I think that's a fair enough and reasonable enough argument. The same way they say it to us, we can say it to them. Is that fair enough?
Yes, fair enough. But I don't know that we are going to see that kind of change. There's so many aspects of life in this country that when you look at what people have been calling for so many years, I mean, we've got younger people who are now occupying these positions, and their stances are much different from the stance of the people who were there before. As long as you get the power, you enjoy the power, even when you have been preaching against it as a younger person, you know?
Right, but once you get in there, you tend to fall in line.
Yes, now, and that's why I said, in general terms, even when I listen to politicians, it is not what they say and how sweet they sound. It is what do they actually do at the end of the day that makes the difference, because it is natural within human beings to project what they believe ought to be. But when it comes to implementation, you can see great contradictions between what a person says and what the person actually does. Because you're trying to appeal to an audience, you're trying to make people believe that you have the right idea, you know what is the right thing to do. But when you get behind the scenes, you see that some of the very things that they're espousing in public, they're doing the complete opposite in private. So that is why in public life, you just got to look more at the deeds rather than the words.
Right. But you mentioned, though, of the fear of victimization. And I don't think that the fear of victimization is without basis. I think there is good or reasonable basis for concern as it relates to victimization.
Even when you are fighting for what is considered to be your right?
Yes, sir. In all sectors of society, or so it seems. And that's a conversation that we can have personally and privately. But anyway, let me go on to the school. Reopening of school come Monday morning for class fours. Now, there are protocols in place. I think those protocols were probably established by the Ministry of Education, possibly working with the Ministry of Health. That's what I'm assuming. I do not know. But my concern is there is supposed to be strict adherence to those protocols. Now, this is what is of great concern to me. One of the protocols clearly said for the children, they must wash their hands before and after using the bathroom. They must close the toilet lid before flushing. David, the school that my son will be returning to does not have toilet lids. I inquired of the principal, and she confirmed that's still the case. I asked if they will be getting lids, and the answer was no. So my thing is, how is it that whoever is responsible put these protocols in place, and from their end, they have not put the necessary means in place for the children to adhere to the protocols? Because my thing is, There is no way that a child will be permitted on the school compound without a face mask. That's a requirement according to the protocol. And I'm saying that in the same way we, the parents, have to keep our end of the contract or bargain or deal or whatever, the students are required to do likewise. I think the Ministry of Education or whoever is responsible should ensure that the toilets have lids, because you can't tell people to close the toilet lids before you flush the toilet and the toilets don't have lids. To me, that's a concern. All right? So possibly on Sunday, someone can raise that when you have the discussion on the reopening of school. Now, the other thing that I would like to know is, going back to school on Monday for the class fours, is that mandatory or not? Because I would like clarification on that. I kind of got the impression that it is not mandatory. If you're not comfortable with your child or children going back to school, that you don't have to send a child back to school. But I want to know if you can find out factually what the position is in respect of that.
Okay, sir.
All right, thank you.
Down to brass tacks. Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Brother Harris. How are you?
I'm well, and you?
You remember me?
No.
This is the caller that called you last week.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the mailbox when you asked me if
okay.
I won as yet.
Yes.
But I still ain't able to buy none any as yet. But anyhow, Mr. Harris, I want to put two brief points to you.
Okay.
One, the banking system. Two, the national insurance. Let me start with the first one, Mr. Harris. Let me start with national insurance first. We all know the word and bill and one there. But Mr. Harris, could we please hear our prime minister, my prime minister actually, get more vocal about these poor people who are home, over 20,000 strong home. You know, the last time she spoke, the Prime Minister spoke, she said in 10 days, people will have their monies, right? Or the vast majority of people will have their monies, right? Mr. Ellis, let me be fair. 10 days gone by a wide margin. You know, what I'm basically afraid of, listen, I know Belgians, they're not forgettable people. Belgians will hold things towards you when it comes to election. A smart leader don't want 20,000 strong go against him or her. You know what I mean? Make those people happy.
So what do you think the government is trying to do at the moment? You don't think they're trying to make those people happy?
I got to be frank with you.
Mm-hmm.
I got to say no. For what he's saying, I got to say no. I'm figure saying it because it is my party. I can be very frank with you. Mm-hmm. I support the BLP party.
So where are they feeling?
Mr. Ellis, these people, they're feeling and show how they're feeling. These people got light bill. They got water bill. They got food. They're home and working. These people ain't got lucrative bank accounts where they could turn back and go through, you know. You know what I mean? Where they can live off. You know, these people that are dependent on these national insurance returns, they don't have a million or 1 point this on their account or 2 point this on their account. These are small, poor, starving people. And I keep saying again, the same way when you file, I put this before you a bit before. The same way when you file it for your income tax, there does put a penalty on you. Why it can't be the same way too to the national insurance when they give people trouble in getting their monies? A fine should be put on them as well too.
Okay.
Let me hear your view on it, Mr. Ellis. Let me hear your view on it.
Well, I prefer sometimes to hear your views. rather than to get involved in commenting on everything that people say on the calling program.
Well, myself, it's nobody in my shoe corn, you know. Nobody in my shoe
corn. It's not, well, you know, but it is always interesting to hear that. But you, the people out there,
yeah,
carry a greater degree of authority than a moderator who sits down here every day airing his or her views. Many times you bring authenticity to the issues that are presented, and therefore it's important to hear you and let other people share their views. Sometimes it isn't always necessary for you to hear mine.
All right, let me move on to the second one. Mm-hmm. Tell me if I should put this to you, or if I should wait another day when Brother Johnson, who was a former banker, you know anything about the Federal Bank and the Central Bank, or you prefer let me leave that for Mr. Johnson?
The Federal Bank and the Central Bank?
Yeah.
I didn't know that we had a Federal Bank in Barbados.
No, we don't have a Federal Bank here. But I asked if you know anything about the Federal Bank.
You mean Federal Reserve?
The Federal Bank.
The Federal Reserve in the United States?
Yeah, in the United States, yeah.
Which is the equivalent of the Central Bank in the United States.
Right. So okay. You know anything?
Like what? Anything like what? I know they exist.
Okay, good. All right. Something bothered me, Mr. Ellis. Why it is that the Federal Bank can sign a check, has no money on that account, and it's legal. Could you explain that to me?
No, I can't explain it to you.
All right, I'm going to leave this to I will talk to Mr. Johnson pertaining these type of things.
Yes.
All right, but you have a nice day, Mr.
You
Ellis.
Do too. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks.
Hello, Mr. Ellis. How are you doing, man?
I'm okay. Look, this discussion about the church, if we can have gatherings of 250 people or less, wouldn't that apply to the church as well? Unless the government expressly said that the church is excluded, then it means that the only issue that the church will have is close contact in terms of touching each other, and I believe communion is one of the issues they will have to look at. And the distancing issue, touching each other and laying of hands and that sort of thing, would have to be considered. But as long as you have this space, then you can have as many people, up to 250, as I would interpret it, as the space will allow you to have. Now, they have a lot of churches that are small and have to take into consideration that they don't have enough space for appropriate physical distancing. So that is something that they will have to look at. But to say that you're listening for something more specific on the church, I don't know how much more specific you would want it to be. But that's my interpretation. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Hello, Ms. Ellis. How are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
Fine, thank you.
Yes.
This church issue was one of the things I actually called to talk about with you because, and I did mention it in another place, that I mean, okay, so you're saying 250 persons or less at the parties, right? No, the churches would be put under a great deal of scrutiny, and as according to Ms. Motley's speech last night, there was no indication that the restrictions on the churches were lifted. The parties, by the very nature, are designed for people to socialize. And I mean, FETS in particular is going to have a lot of dancing. You can't social distance and dance at the same time. So how are you going to allow people at a FET? 250 people, mind you, is a lot of people. Even just 50 is a lot. But then at churches, the scrutiny is so great. You know, and it's interesting because Ms. Motley kept referencing God and Jesus in her speech. So there needs to be greater clarity as it relates to this issue. Anyhow, Mr. Ellis, we were told that the commercial flights will be resuming next month.
And I have a question about this. Primarily, who will be aboard these flights? Persons on business and vacation, or will it strictly be on a repatriation basis? Because if these persons come in on vacation or business, you know, the government, I don't see it practical for the government to quarantine them. If you're only visiting the country for a short period, it wouldn't be practical to get quarantined for 2 weeks, like the persons who came in the other day. And in terms of tests now, I don't know if they have all, because, I mean, people are going to be coming in by the hundreds and thousands. So how are tests going to be accommodated? And when you're testing these people, where are they going to stay in the meantime?
Obviously, rhetorical questions. Don't abrast that.